You're listening to Radiate Motivate Radio with Monique Valdez and Keith Wright, only on LA Talk Radio.
What is up? What is going on? My name is Monique. Please, please, please call me Mo. Don't call me by my government name. I am your motivational homegirl. Welcome to Radiate Motivate Radio. And I am here with my amazing co-host, my BFF, my business partner for over 8 years, and the person that structures this chaotic mind of mine, Mr. Keith Wright.
Thank you. Keith Wright here. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. This is something that we've been looking forward to for a while. So everybody that took the time to be with us, I want to thank you all for that.
Yes, please. And also from the bottom of my heart, thank you for joining us. This is an awesome journey for both Keith and I. We are vulnerable, and this is new, and this is the unknown, but it's also the known because we've been visualizing this for about 6+ years.
Absolutely. 7 or 8, actually.
So please, 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 I'm going to be like a Mexican jumping bean, all hyper and pumped over here, being my own hype woman. So please bear with me. I'm just super excited.
Yes.
And Keith, like Keith said, we've been doing this for years.
Yeah, it's been about 7 years since we first had the idea of doing something like this. And to see it come to fruition today is a blessing. So, again, thank you guys for tuning in and all your support.
And where does Radiate Motivate, where did the ideas, because we developed this literally on napkins in the desert with nothing. You want to touch on that for a little bit?
Well, actually, it started when we first met. You had mentioned something about IMAP or something of that nature, and it struck a chord with me because I'm big into acronyms.
Yes.
And I had an acronym, IMAP, and it stood for identify, as in identifying what it is, the problem or the solution that you have, or identify the problem and finding a solution, meditate, acceptance, and progress. And you had something similar but different words, but we both had IMAP as a acronym.
Right. I got it from my psychiatrist years ago, and I mentioned it to Keith about IMAP. And he had the same idea. So for us to come together like IMAP, what are the chances and what are we going to do together? But we knew at that moment, 7 years ago, that something was bigger than us, basically, that we were going to work together as speakers and then just developing the ideas, you know, having nothing and just developing these ideas from the logo to it started with unique motivation and all these ideas that we had to try to get this. And here we are.
We both wanted to be motivational speakers. We just didn't have, we had the idea, but we didn't have the format or the platform at the time.
Right. So just briefly about me, I am currently a super duper 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 senior at Arizona State University. I am on a strict schedule to get me to graduate this year, class of 2001. Woo woo. Auntie in the house. And I study communications, mass communications, and I am genuinely obsessed with self-communication. It's just my passion. So I've had my career on hold. My godmother was sick, so I was spending some valuable time with her as she transitioned and went through the battle of cancer. So this is the first time of me coming out of my box from healing this project of Radiate Motivate. I love it because it brings my education. It highlights it, but it also brings in, which I love, my personal experiences, and I hold that to a higher value. I love all my stories, and I hope that it inspires you to grow. That's kind of what's going on with me. Keith, what is currently going on with you?
Outside of launching this amazing radio show with you, I'm also working with another radio show, Battle Rap Radio LA. We actually just had our first event last night at Nome 11 right here in LA. It was a total success. You can find that footage online as well on that platform. I'm also working on Right Insight. My company is a consulting company. We specialize in organizing events for people, whether it be private parties, for nonprofits. We do fundraisers and things of that nature, help raise donations. We also do booking talent, finding accommodation for people, travel, and a whole list of services. So you can go in the bio and look more into that, Right Insight LLC, if you need any of those services. And we're also working with Bouger Studios, and they do all of our editing, filming, production. Yay. So we cover everything around the board, but we'll touch on that later on. But for now, we're going to focus on Radiate, Motivate Radio, and everything that we have going here.
Awesome. Thank you so much. All right. So we are going to jump right into the topic. We are talking, we'll talk more about ourselves as we go along. We have a diverse portfolio of stories, and it ranges from everything. So you'll know more as we go along. It's on our bios on latalkradio.com, and you can follow us on social media. So jumping right back into it, now that we introduced ourselves, you can see who we are, you see our vibe. We want to talk about self-honesty as our first
self-honesty
topic. And this is important for me because it showcased my journey a little bit. If you follow me on social media, you'll know that nothing was handed to me. I kind of worked against the grain. It's not by luck or chance that I'm here. It all started with my mindset, which all started with self-honesty as step one. We are the problem, but we are also the solution. Sure. So taking problems my whole life and taking them on mentally, physically, spiritually was so draining. I ended up being so depressed and full of anxiety and addictions. And it was not the business. I was living very repressed, and I was taking medication. I was doing all the things to distract myself from what was important, which was my growth, which is your growth. That is why we are here, I believe. And I learned through the process that I had to stay in tune, be very self-aware and self-honest all the time, and understand that the problems are bigger than me. We react to our problems and we get overwhelmed. I actually, coming over here, this is a self-honest moment. Yeah. I was coming over here stressing.
Stressed out.
We were late. We didn't get to do the walkthrough. We didn't get to set up the way we wanted to. We didn't get nothing done. I don't have my flowers, my little Radiate Motivate stuff that I put up here. So I was having a moment coming up here. And in the whole time that I was getting stressed out, I had to remind myself that I am bigger than my problems. I am in control of the situation, and I can't take that stress on. Everything, what it's going to be, it's going to be. So even going into my stories of that I speak about, my trauma, my past, it's never out of hatred or pain. I was going to launch Trauma Combos, which is a little delayed. It's going to get there. Nothing comes out of pain or hatred. I appreciate genuinely everything that I've been through, whether it be abuse, whether it be addiction, whether it be everything that I've been through, the trauma of my life. I love it because it accidentally empowered me and it trained me for my success. I'm naturally more tougher. Take no smack. I speak up. And here I am at LA Talk Radio. Speak my mind.
Yes.
So what is self-honesty mean for you, Keith? Like, what does it hit home for you when you think self-honesty?
Well, for me, I have a couple of notes here on what self-honesty actually means, the way it's defined, but the way that it actually applies to my life, I can explain that further. But just to kind of get an outline of what it means is, one of the quotes that I saw was, "Nothing makes you more vulnerable than the refusal to be honest with yourself about what you want."
So, and then that kind of even goes into, like, what are we not allowing us to feel? Why don't we allow that success in? Why are we self-sabotaging ourselves? That's what I think when I hear that quote.
Right.
Like, that's so, it resonates with me because it's like, man, we're not allowing the success and we're not, what are we scared to feel? We're holding on to this cycle of negative thinking. What are we scared? Why are we scared to let go and enjoy the happiness and let it in and let the success in?
Yeah, one thing that I will say to touch on what you were saying, we're kind of over here in a rush. We didn't really prepare. When we found out, if you guys follow us online, we just found out we've been doing this radio show less than 2 weeks ago. And when we discussed it, I told her, like, I'm not preparing with you. I'm not rehearsing with you. I'm not doing any of that because I wanted to be natural and organic. I didn't want to come up here and try to restructure or to recite a conversation that we previously had. I want us to just be, just go with the flow and whatever happens, happens. Because we've had these conversations so many times, it's no point to overthink it and put that pressure on ourselves at this point.
Right. And but I do that. I definitely do that. I'm an overthinker.
I'm an overthinker. And the thing is, I learned from that because, again, like I aspire to be a motivational speaker. And I had an opportunity to speak, which we'll tell you more of with the Inside and Out Project. And I had a speech that I prepared for day and night for weeks.
He was on it. Like, he read it to me over and over.
It was the most preparation that I've put into anything ever.
Right.
Like, I was so stoked for this. I rehearsed it. I nailed it. I recorded it every day. And when the time came at this meet and greet, we had all these people in attendance. It was a beautiful scene. I got up there and I just blanked out.
That's right.
And I was speaking, but I didn't even know what I was saying. Like, I was just talking and it just wasn't registering. As soon as I walked off stage, I told the person hosting, like, you have to let me go back on. Like, that wasn't it. That wasn't right. And she called me back up and I just spoke from the heart. I just said what I felt in that moment. And it went over so much better. So I just want to focus on just speaking my truth, especially with a topic like self-honesty. I just want to focus on just saying what I feel and speaking my truth and not getting
all
caught
the time.
Up. Yeah, and not overthinking it in any way, shape, or form. And my thing is, I don't know what I'm going to say, but I hope that something I say resonates with someone. That's the whole goal of this for me.
Absolutely. Sorry. So I would probably say the first time that I've had a self-honest moment. I know it's kind of vulnerable to speak about these stories, but yeah. I'm going to go into a little story time of Mo. I've had a very diverse life, let me tell you. So I haven't really spoken about personal stories that have happened to me. So this is kind of exciting. I'm getting pumped just talking about this. It's going to be a little crazy. But the first moment I would say that I had a self-honest, sit your ass down, Mo, and check yourself would be in 1999, long time ago.
What's that, 22 years ago?
Yeah, 22 years ago. Auntie in the house.
Okay.
But that moment, I really sat myself down and really checked myself, and I realized the power of self-honesty and energy at the same time in the most random hood experience. So, let me just put it to you this way. All right. Visualize this with me. Okay. It's 1999. Okay. We're in LA. Me and my homegirl. What's up, Michelle? How you doing? So we're in East LA in the 90s. In the 90s in East LA is just like the movie Training Day. Gang, gang, gang. Don't go down the wrong street. Sets in the West. You know, you got to know where you're from. You got to know everything. And I was in love with that life. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was in my ego. When I was 18, I didn't listen to anybody. I was reckless. I was fearless. I put myself in a lot of extreme situations because I had a dysfunctional environment at home. So I really did. I ran away. I ran away at 14. I was always involved with some BS. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I just had to kind of put myself in these extreme situations to kind of, you know, basically...
kind of distract you from the things that you didn't want to deal with at home.
Exactly.
I understand.
Right. An example would be when I was, by the time I was 18, like this is how tough I was. By the time I was 18, I've already had two grown men put guns to me. Okay. And these guns, when they were pointing it to me, I wasn't scared. I was challenging them. I was calling them a coward. I was making fun of them. I was roasting them because they wouldn't pull the trigger. Because they wouldn't shoot me. I was kind of calling them out because that's how I grew up, super tough in my ego, very hard-headed, but I was also very suicidal at the time. I lived a very bipolar life. I was cutting myself. I was already addicted to painkillers. I was depressed. So I lived this bipolar life where I had this reckless life Monday through Sunday. And then I turn around and I'm a good student and I love to be nerdy and I love to challenge myself. But I really had to embrace that surrounding myself, that I was in my surroundings that was negative, you know, and that was reflecting. That impacted me more than the positive part about me. I never tried to be successful myself. So I'm 18. I'm in LA. There's gangs. Gang. I'm at a party with my homegirl, Michelle. And we're loving our life, yada, yada. And we have a G-code. We never would separate. We've been in some situations where it got weird. So we had a G-code. We never separate as chicks. And next thing you know, all of a sudden, someone gets stabbed at the party. I can't find my friend. I'm getting pushed into a backyard in East LA. And it's dark.
So it's just you and your friend at this party.
Yeah.
Together.
It's like a Tuesday night. Like, it's everyday thing for us.
Okay. You guys got separated.
We got separated. And I'm stuck at this party in East LA where someone got stabbed and everyone's in this backyard. And we're just stuck there. Okay. We're being quiet because of the ghetto bird. Helicopters are flying. Police are everywhere. And we're stuck being quiet. I'm in the backyard with family members, mamas, grandmamas, children. The killer, cholos, like their girls, like everybody and their mama, and I can't even find my friend. And I'm sitting there having a moment to myself, but real quick at the time, I was talking to my ex, and he would implant the seed of thought for me that there was more to life than gangs. He planted the seed of thought in me that I had a better life than what I was experiencing. So when I sat there at this party, it really dawned on me, like, there's gotta be more to life than this. I don't wanna be like these people. I actually don't respect or wanna be like any of these fools.
So when he planted that seed, was that something you were receptive to initially?
No,
or
actually.
Or did it take this extreme situation for it to really sink in for you?
Heck yeah, I'm hard-headed as hell.
I know. I've
seen it. So it took a long time for me to really understand what he was saying, that there was more to life than that. And it took somebody, I don't know if the person was murdered or he was injured, but I was in the backyard and it was a terrible experience. So I'm sitting there just really thinking about it. And this is when I had a self-honest moment. I started telling myself, like, I don't want to be like these people. Not only do I not want to be like these people, I don't really look up to any of these people. I don't want to be in gangs. I don't want this to be my reputation. What if I really believed in myself for the first time? Like, what if? I've never really done that. But what if I went 100% to myself? And I stood up. It was quiet. I stood up and I said, started yelling. I said, excuse me. And everyone's trying to hush me, trying to get me to shut up, you know, because there's police around and they don't want to get caught.
Right.
I'm like, excuse me. While you guys have three options, you can either kill me or I'm jumping over this fence. And the fence, there's no way I was going to jump over that fence. I had a little hoochie dress on and my cute little platforms. Like, I was not about to jump over that fence, but I would have.
Or
I'm walking out that front door. Those were the three options.
So you got up and gave a speech and an ultimatum all in one.
Yes, that was probably the first time that I ever spoke in front of a bunch of people. Yeah, okay. I really spoke and just gave these people, all these gang members, an ultimatum. So right when I said that, some cholo just turns around and hands me his keys to his car. Okay. Well, he says, okay, it's a Honda Civic up front. And I know I'm 18 at the time, but right, I didn't need to know how to drive. I never drove until I was like 19, 20 years old.
So wait, you didn't know how to drive and you got up and demanded keys from someone.
Pretty much.
What was the plan?
I had no clue. I didn't even know where I was at.
So where were you going to go?
Okay, so this is the worst part about it.
You just knew
you
had to leave.
I know I had to get out of there. Okay. I felt it like I got to go. I got to go be the best me, and this is not it. I am not going to fight for the bottom. Like, that's my mentality in that moment. I don't care how I leave. I'm out.
Right.
And I'm a go hard or go home kind of girl. Like, that's it for me. So he hands me the keys. Not only do I not know how to drive, but I'm blind as hell. This is before LASIK surgery. So I didn't have my glasses. I couldn't be a witness to anything. Even if they pulled me over, I wouldn't even know what to say because I couldn't see anything.
So when you get out there, is it like police around or what's the scene?
So I go outside and I get the keys and I go outside and I'm going to the wrong car. I don't even see what car it is. Okay. I don't even know what car it is. So I'm squinting and I'm going and I hear, pss, pss, pss. Hey, the one on the left. Okay. All right. Well, my bad. All right. So I get in the car and I pull up a little bit. I don't even know how to work a car. I only drove one time in my life before that. And it was with my mama. And she was like, no, give me the keys. You're never driving again. Like, it was that bad. So they all jump in the car. And we drive off. And we did not get caught.
So you took them with you?
Yeah, they jumped in like a pile of cholos jump in the car, right? I can't see. Like, just visualize.
And you're driving.
It's East LA, the ghetto birds on top of us. I'm driving, which I don't know how to do. And I'm cruising, squinting, like, just praying at this point. Like, please let me find my homegirl. This was before cell phones. We had pagers back then. So I'm paging her, like, 911, 911. And once we got out of that area, which, again, I couldn't even tell you where I was at. I was so blind. You know, one of the cholos put that in park real quick. Like, come on, I'm going to drive. They were all yelling at me the whole entire time that I was driving. And then after that, I never looked back. I decided to leave that life. I decided to go full force to move into the Bay Area. And I jumped into being a mom and a wife and just the whole spiritual journey and so forth and so forth. So that was the first time in 1999 that I was really self-honest with myself. And it was a really interesting time. And I could tell you one more really quick story when I was 30.
Well, let me ask you this before you move on. Looking back on that situation, for anybody that's in similar situations or living similar lifestyles, what would you say to them?
There's a better life for you out there. Don't go investing in gangs, other people's dreams, other machines. You need to invest in yourself. You know, Jay-Z says, like, what does he say about your mama's house being rented? Don't be getting caught up on the street that your mama's house.
Don't put me on the spot about a Jay-Z quote. Okay,
I know all Jay-Z quotes. Shaking my head that you don't know it.
I know all Jay-Z quotes.
444 album.
I'm going to say he said, don't die over a hood your mama's renting.
Exactly. If you don't own the block, don't fight for the block, basically.
Exactly.
And a lot of the gangs died out in the 90s, but the mentality is still here coming back.
Oh, it's definitely still prevalent for sure. It's not It's not eased up. It's just different.
And not only that, when I first started talking about coming back here to Whittier and coming back to this life, I heard so many people tell me not to do it. Even when I said I wanted to motivate, I want to go to the hoods, I want to talk to people, I want to go to the low-income areas, people would tell me not to do it. They would tell me, like, oh, that's such a low energy. It's going to suck you in. I'm like, I'm from there.
Right.
Like, I am the streets. Like, they can't suck me back in.
So what made you want to go help people in these areas?
Because if it wasn't for my ex-husband, and I do give him props for that, even to this day, there's appreciation there, love and respect. I appreciated that he would plant the seed of thought because I was so involved. I didn't see anything else. And even talking to people out here, they don't see anything outside of LA or out of the gang life. But there's so much more out there. And it's so beautiful. And it's not about that. It's about self-discovery at the end of the day, no matter what circumstances you are in, you know?
Absolutely.
When I turned 30, I actually had another self-honest moment. I was going through a divorce. And here I go from that gang life to wife and mother, was killing the game. I'm such a great mom. I'm such a great wife. I pride myself on that. But then when that was over, our relationship was over, it's like, now what?
Right.
Who am I besides being a wife and mother? And let me tell you, that scared the hell out of me because I realized that I was just doing job roles. I love my job. I love my career as being a mom. I love being a wife. I love that stuff. But I don't want to be defined as just that. I don't want to be defined as a worker.
I hear that a lot. Why do you think that is?
What?
That you don't want to be defined as just being a mother or just being a wife or just being something else. Because, I mean, a lot of people, those are honorable positions and roles and
absolutely
titles.
Absolutely.
So,
oh,
like,
it's
what
still
was
an
it
honor
that made you not want it to be defined as that?
Well, because you got to think, your kids are going to move on. They're going to grow. They're going to move on. They're going to evolve. They're going to be amazing. You know, whether you're with a significant other or not, it could end at any time. You know, you could look at them and say it's unconditional, but it's not unconditional. Every relationship does have conditions. If you're cheating, that's a condition. No cheating. Right. Those are conditions. Unconditional love is nothing. So that unconditional love could be gone at any time. And then who do you have at the end of the day? You have yourself. You know, and that's why it's important. I can be the best manager. I could be the best mom and that, but that's not who I am. You know, that's not what my talents are. It's not talent to be a mom. It's great to be a mom. It's an honor to be a mom.
Right.
But it's not a talent to be a mom. You know, this is my talent. This is what I love to do, is my passion, is helping people, giving back, those type of things. You know, so it's spun me out. Like, why? Who am I besides a wife and mother? I don't know anything else but fitting into this box. and if I get out the box and who I am. As a matter of fact, when I went through the divorce, I had a major, 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 major crisis. I had a meltdown. I didn't know who I was. I had a panic attack. And that's when I decided to check into seeing a psychiatrist, into therapy. Because in that moment, I thought, like, I didn't want to curse my children with my depression. I felt like I couldn't conquer it. I felt like it was bigger than me, you know? So when I checked myself in, it was like I made that decision. No, I'm in charge of this life. I got to pave the way. I got to figure it out. I got to jump into the journey of who I am. Why am I scared to be alone? Isn't that crazy that we're scared to be alone? You know, it takes 2 years to get to know somebody. You know, you don't know somebody for 2 years. When have you spent 2 years on your own? Just by yourself, just healing and learning about yourself. Really getting to know yourself. Not your traumas or your limitations. Or, you know, we copy the voices and the attitudes of our parents and our, you know, elders. Like, none of that. Who are you? Just raw. Just who you are. And that part scares people. It scared me. We go into addictions. We go into enabling behaviors. I've been everything addicted to painkillers, to anxiety, to depression, you know, to stress. So to, like, really let it go. Because you can't manifest what you want to manifest with holding on to not being honest. You can't start anything in your life without being real. If it's the foundation's got to be genuine and it's got to be real. And when you start seeing that when you start seeing that your problems, that you're bigger than your problems, Albert Einstein says, we cannot solve our problems with the same thinking that we use to create them. All our problems is a product of our thinking. So every time I get in a fight with somebody, whether it be an ex-friend, ex-ex-ex, or whatever it is, I'm sitting here like this. Okay, you are a product of my thinking. I am causing this problem, but I'm also the solution. So how do I rethink this? So constantly checking myself. And that's it's part of growth. And it's a journey. It's not a bad thing. People get scared of that self-conversation.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. What tips would you give people to get to know themselves better through self-honesty? How can a person get to know themselves? It sounds so simple and easy. Like, you need to know yourself. The greatest goal in life is to know yourself. But how do you actually do that? How do you know who you are?
Well, you have to start with looking in the mirror. I would recommend start writing down the things in your past, timelining it to the things that you want in the future. If you're in control of this life, okay, just say you're fully in control and you're not happy. I'll tell you, when I wasn't happy, I was the heaviest. I wore the most makeup. Okay, I got a lot of makeup on today, trying to look cute, but I'm mostly natural now, all right? But I wore the most makeup. I ate the worst foods. I drank and partied all the time. I just was abusing myself. I didn't feel successful. And I had to really timeline it. Okay, this is my past. This is past now. Now, this is my present. And what do I want for my future? And to be honest with yourself, of your past, of your present, and what you want in the future. And to do that without guilt. To do that without, to do it guilt-free. It's okay to be a little selfish for yourself. You know, it's okay to be honest with yourself of what you truly want. Because anxiety, depression, pills, you know, we go for the short-term gratification.
Yes.
But it's got the longest-term effects. We could take pills and it makes us feel good in that moment. Takes away the pain, but your body is telling you it's in pain.
Right.
What is it that it's in pain? And if we keep taking these pills, we might get some other sicknesses and side effects later on, but we don't care.
You're stacking on the problem.
Exactly. As long as I feel good now, as long as I drink, or as long as I party, or as long as I'm doing, well, you know, addicted or
in the moment,
depression, then I'm okay later on. No, how about we heal that? How about we be honest with ourselves and get to the root of the problem? And then we can find the solution, because the solution is underneath all of this trauma and stress and distractions and the 60,000 to 90,000 thoughts
we have
a day.
Every single day.
It's underneath all of that in our subconscious mind. And it takes time to heal. It takes time to be honest about it, you know? And what about you? What was a time that you were, like, really first honest? How has honesty, self-honesty really impacted your life?
Well, the first time that it really made a significant difference for me was In 2012, I caught a case. I was selling marijuana. I got charged with transporting marijuana and ended up fighting this case for 18 months. Mm. I went through attorney after attorney. I had 34 court dates. It lasted 18 or 19 months. I went through five different attorneys. I just wouldn't accept it because naturally I just fight. Unfortunately, I have an extensive criminal history. The first time I got arrested was 1995. I was 15 years old. And me and my best friend, Jay, out of Cleveland, we were headed back to my house, apartment in Willoughby. And he was walking me home. And the police pulled up. And they're like, what are you guys doing out here? It's past curfew, you know? Like, and he was like, yo, I'm walking my friend home.
Okay.
We're not doing anything. He was like, fine. Don't let me see you out here again. So we're walking, like, okay, that was crazy. The police circle the block, come back around, like, didn't I say don't be out here again? Jump out the car, press us. We end up going to jail. That was the first time we got arrested for curfew. And I actually been arrested
for curfew? That was it?
At 15, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I've actually got arrested.
I never
arrested.
Known anybody that got arrested for curfew. I know that,
they got
you know.
Me.
We always used to joke, like, the police are going to come hide in the bushes, but...
It's a real thing. Oh. Well, then will it be in 1995? It was, apparently. I don't know. But every year from 1995 to 2015, I'd actually been arrested, whether it be for drinking, marijuana possession. I got a lot of driving on suspended. So I got a DUI, and I would not stop driving because I justified it in my mind. Like, I have to drive so I can get to work, so I can do what I need to do to survive. I can't just sit here and just wait on a miracle. I got to do what I got to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it just kept putting me in a work. I kept digging the hole deeper and deeper. Mm-hmm. And it took me until 2015 to actually just sit down like, you know what, let me find out another way. And once I accepted that, I had so many rides that I had caravans of people that would take me places.
Me.
You know what I mean? Yeah, but... The first time it really applied for me is when I caught that case in 2012, and I went through those five attorneys, and they all told me, like, yo, you're going to prison, you're going to prison, you're getting it. Like, it's nowhere, you're not getting out of this. You're not getting out of it. And I accepted, like, I'm going to go to prison. I'm fine with that. But the situations behind it is what really got me, because I was a promoter at the time, and there was someone I promoted with that told me they needed some marijuana. And if you're in a promoting game, they go hand in hand. Selling drugs and promoting, like, it's all hand in hand. So I connected this person with this person. I didn't realize that the person that asked me to get the weed had already caught a charge, and they were doing the tell on three, go free. So they were setting me up. Basically, if you get caught selling drugs, the police press you, like, who's your supplier? What did you do? Well, if you want to beat this case, you give me three people that are selling drugs, then we'll let you go free. He was under that young kid. And so I ended up getting snitched on, told on. He set me up.
So set up and snitched you.
Yeah, went to meet up with them. The police swarmed in and came out with assault rifles, the whole nine. So for those year and a half, like, people are telling me, like, oh, that's messed up. You got snitched on. You know what I mean? Snitches get stitches. They were trying to focus my energy on revenge,
right.
And you got done dirty, and that's messed up, and they made me out to be the victim.
Mm.
But I realized, like, no, I shouldn't have been selling weed. For one, I knew it was wrong. Everybody knows. It's two places this is going to happen. You're either going to end up in jail or dead. So I actually got the better of the two. I'm only going to go to jail for this. So once I accepted, like, you know what? I'm not going to prison because this person told on me. I'm going to prison because I made a decision to give him the power to tell on me and take me away from my family. So once I accepted that, my prison experience and everything else was totally different. I used it as a way to build myself, to focus on myself. And it was the first time that I was not drinking, not smoking. I was focused. I was meditating. I was journaling. I was working out. I was working on a business. We actually started Right Inside LLC from prison.
All these ideas.
Everything just... that I did, like, this was the time that I actually took action on all the dreams I had because I didn't have all those distractions, you know what I mean? Those things that didn't really mean anything to me, you know? So I found more of a purpose. I found more of a focus. But if I would have just stayed in that mindset, like, oh, he did me dirty, it would have eaten me up on the inside. Because I see people that are locked up that get snitched on, and that's all they really focus their energy on.
Absolutely.
So I was lucky enough to kind of accept and take responsibility in a real way. So that was the most recent time that it's happened. And ever since then, my life has been totally different. Like, I got out of prison in November of 2018. Within a year, I was in Houston. I was an executive director of the Inside and Out Project. I was meeting with attorneys, judges, policy directors, Bell's Bonds Company owners, advocates in different organizations. I was actually featured in the Houston Press. I did speeches. I worked with job placement people. I was working with Path of Freedom and all these wonderful people. So I went from being in jail, in prison, to helping people getting out of prison. And it really took me taking that acceptance and being honest with myself. Because when I was there, luckily, I had a ton of support. Like, Monique visited every weekend.
Saturday.
For 40 months. I think I had 117 visits or something. You kept me with a lot of books, CDs.
Wrote you every day for the longest time.
I wrote you every day.
Yeah, I stopped after the last 6 months. Carpal tunnel.
Yeah, the prison experience actually brought us closer together. It helped me realize who I was. It helped me define what I wanted to do in life. And since I've been out, I've been chasing my goals and my dreams, and it's been manifesting. I know it sounds cheesy, but it's real. It really is real. So I want to take what I've learned and help people who are in those situations, because one of the big misconceptions, I know this is totally off topic, but it must be said, is that there are a lot of just regular people. And when I say regular, I mean just like brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers and cousins who are in jail for drug charges and petty crimes.
DUIs or marijuana, which is legal now.
There's so many ways you can go to prison. You don't have to murder somebody to go to prison. It's a very small percentage of murderers and killers and rapists. The majority of people that are in prison are people that got caught with minor drug infractions. And those people need rehab. They don't need to be in prison. So
mental health is real.
I want to help people getting out of prison, people that have these drug addictions. I want to help homeless people because I know that drugs has a big impact on people ending up there.
Absolutely.
I want to help kids because to kind of segue into the other's self-honesty, the reason I wanted to do this, I asked myself, like, why am I doing this radio show? What am I doing and why am I doing it? What am I not doing and why am I not doing it? And when I really thought about it, like, I didn't do the radio show. Like it's cool to say, like, yeah, I got a radio show. But the honest reason I'm doing this is for my sons. And shout out to Kaden, Karan, Raheem, and Rashad. I want to make them proud. I want to show them that they can do it, too. I want them to see me, and I want them to say, that's my dad. If he did it, I can do it. I want them to believe in themselves. I want them to speak up. I want them to do right. I want to be the example because I've been absent from their lives. So I can't just come back and just say, hey, do this, do that. I have to show them through all the stuff that I've done, because the things that I do are going to directly impact the things that they do. Kids don't do what you tell them. They do what you do. Exactly. So I have to lead by example.
That's beautiful. I would have to say probably when you were locked up, we said that these are ideas came on napkins that we wrote down.
Yeah,
I just want to touch on that real quick, because let me tell you, I had to smuggle in my speeches and my chapstick to prison. Thank you very much to write it down, bring in our pencils and have these half broken pencils on napkins. And we would sit and write our speeches about self-honesty. We would practice and everyone's looking at us like we're crazy.
And think about that. People are smuggling drugs and all kinds of contraband.
We're nerdy as hell.
We're smuggling in because you can't take anything in to visit or out for whatever reason. So I would have to sneak in my speeches because we were her speeches. We would challenge each other like we're going to do a speech on this topic. And every week we would speak it to each other because we're visualizing this exact moment.
This moment.
and like the risks that we took, like she could have got banned just because she was bringing these speeches in. And she really had to smuggle them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so seriously. And not only that, we had to harass the guards for a pencil, and they never wanted to give us a pencil. Like, can we evolve a little bit? Can you help us out? We
used to get crayons.
Yeah, crayons. And I mean, like, you know those old school napkins? They're not paper towels. You know the ones that, the industrial brown ones? We had to write our notes on that, and then I used to have to hide it somewhere and carry
it
out.
Type it up. Right. Send it to me.
And not only that, we were practicing outside because that was the only place we could freely speak. And it's in Arizona, Yuma, Arizona, borderline Mexico, in the middle of the desert, 120 degrees sometimes. And we're sitting there sweating, practicing. So this is definitely a vision. And we would stare outside the fence at the beautiful, deserted lot, you know, filled with bugs and just inmates. And it was just it's so sad. The atmosphere is so sad.
But I will
and
say
we
this.
Would sit there oh I'm sorry and we would sit there and say on our hardest times, our hardest days, that we wanted to give up, like, just visualize this, we'll be in California, just visualize we're going to be in Mexico, imagine this is the beach, and here we are. Like, you know, I used to tell Keith all the time, it doesn't matter how we get there, we're going to get there. This is the vision, and we're going to stick with it. And holding on, being real quick, because one moment that I really want to highlight, when Keith was going away, it was very surreal for me because I felt like I was a little bit on the privileged side in the moment, because here's his lawyer telling him, the reason why this is happening to you is because you're black. And I felt so like, what? I couldn't even fathom that. Because he's black, this is happening to him. They're giving you this much time. I couldn't even comprehend that he couldn't just go to the judge and talk about it, or, you know, work out something. It just was so, it burst in my little box that I was in. You know, I felt a little sheltered. And when Keith was getting ready to go away, we had a real moment. And Keith turned to me like, this is reality. I am going away. This is reality. And I said, no, this is your reality. You're manifesting this for yourself, and you know better. We read. You're educated. You're self-educated. I admire Keith because he's so self-educated. I go to school. You're getting this as a super-duper senior. Like, I learned to be better at communications. I study to learn my speech and to be more intricate with my wording, like the way I threw that word in.
Intricate.
Thank you very much. It's not on my notes either.
There you go.
But you are natural. You're naturally good at articulating your words. I look up to Keith, even when we're in court, to hear him speak against the lawyers or the judges. It just was like, how is this person, this incredible being, going through this? It's like I couldn't put those two together. When you were locked up, I didn't see you in the orange. I just saw you. Like, I couldn't put those. I wouldn't accept that this was the life that we were going to settle for. I just couldn't. And even him being locked up has given me a huge amount of discipline. I had to stop partying. I had to stop. He was relying on me. And we had a great friendship that started off when he first got locked up. So for that to develop by using ideas, to spend 8 hours a day every Saturday just getting each other's thoughts, figuring things out, talking it out, talking smack, roasting each other, whatever we got to do.
A lot of roasting.
I'd say I had a leg up on that. Thank you very much.
It was fun. But yeah, you're right. And to kind of touch on that, like, for me, you say I'm self-taught. Like, I've read a lot of books, and I kind of immerse myself into positivity, like watching different videos, because I know the things that we put in ourselves are the things that come out. So I try to keep a balance. Balance is so important in life. Mm-hmm. So I try to overwhelm myself and immerse myself into positivity and knowledge. So there's a lot of things that I know, but I never felt I was in a place to where I could present it to people, because people could be like, who are you? Like, who do you think you are? You're not rich. You're not. So I was always a little bit apprehensive to share the knowledge and the wisdom that I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
So this radio show is a very vulnerable time for me, because I'm sharing things that I normally won't share with people. I mean, if you go to my Instagram, my Facebook, I've literally never shared an opinion publicly on any social media platform. Anything I post is only a picture, only a video, or only a statement. Like, hey, I'm at the beach. hey, I'm flying. Hey, I'm going here. Hey, I'm going there.
Barely.
I never
do that.
Really post anything that I personally feel because I'm so private as a person. But I do feel that I do have some things that I can share that can help people. And hopefully when my sons see this, it inspires them. And anybody else that can resonate with anything that I say, I'm thankful for that.
Absolutely. And just to touch on quickly, one thing that I've realized with self-honesty up till recently, this is how much you got to constantly be on yourself. Just like you are with your kids, just like you are with your relationship, self-honesty, you have to check in with yourself all the time. I moved back here to California. It was about, 2 years ago I moved back. I moved back on very unfortunate circumstances with my godmother being sick. And that was important because she's been the only consistent person in my life that has ever validated how I felt, has validated my abuse or the things that I went through. She listened to me. She cared. She had that unconditional love. And I don't have that outside of her. So when she was sick, it was like I had to get real with myself because it's like I got scared. I got scared of the world.
I saw it.
I was scared to go outside. I didn't know who I was. Besides, I turned literally into that little girl again. That was full of fear. And I wanted to run away so many times as a grown ass woman, 40 years old. I wanted to be like, okay, pack it up, let's go. But I had to face that, and that felt good to really force myself to sit there and deal with my trauma. Yes, I've gone through therapy. Yes, I've healed and I have this spiritual journey. But my muscle memory is triggered here, being back home. You know, being around people that are enablers or people that are antagonizing my trauma is the reason why I ran away or the reason why I was so destructive. So to face that as a grown-ass woman embracing that little girl was so powerful for me. And I'm grateful for my support team as I supported you, supported me while I faced that because I couldn't even leave the house. I couldn't even go to the 99 cent store. I had, who has panic attacks at the 99 cent store? I do.
Yeah, twice.
Yeah. I'm like, like I'm having a panic attack just being at the 99 cent store, the happiest place on the earth. They have all my favorite snacks. So self-honesty is a constant battle that we have to check ourselves in with. And before we wrap it up, I do definitely want to say a couple little things. One little affirmation that I wrote down for speaking truths. I always say this to myself. I will only speak truths to myself. I will speak up against my own limits with unconditional love. I will love and utilize my strengths, but I will also love and understand my weaknesses. I will let my intuition guide me, not my limited thought. And when you're self-honest with yourself, it's uncomfortable at first, but you become confident after a while because you're solid. No one can mess with you. You know, you're sounding what you believe. And I'm here, and I could care less about anyone's opinion. I'm here because I'm just wanting to give good vibes. I love who I've become. Right. Because I've been honest and I want to help other people be better than me. That's my goal. I'm like a queen manager. I love managing. Joy of managing is for people to be better than us.
Right, right.
Also, we have a Radiate Motivate hotline that we open. It's absolutely free. Everything we offer for Radiate Motivate, whether it's our confidence conferences, which we didn't get to talk about too much.
Oh, exactly.
Our genuine groups, which is going to launch at the end of the year. Let me finish school. Let me get a couple weeks of partying in. And then we can launch our genuine group of confidence conferences. But we have a motivational hotline. This goes directly to us. It's open Monday through Friday, 10 to 5. It's free to text. We are not taking calls right now. We can schedule it in the future. But it is there for anyone who needs positive encouragement, positive perspective, and reassurance that you are not in it alone. You got your homegirl here. You got Keith right here. It goes directly to us. And we are here to be here for you. You can follow us on social media at Radiate Motivate, Facebook, Instagram, Radiate Motivate Radio. I'm going to blow it up hopefully this week.
Yes.
But we are engaged. And you want to give them that number?
That number is 562-888-2171.
So please holler at us.
562-888-2171.
If you're going through something, don't go through it alone. We got you. And we are going to be here next week. Hashtag
Hey, thank everybody for being here with us.
We so appreciate your time, and you keep radiating and being awesome. Don't let nobody stop you, honestly. And if you need somebody, reach out through our social media, Radiate Motivate, or reach out through the texting hotline, and we will get right back to you.
All right. Kate and Karan, Rashad Rahim, love you guys.
And this is a shout out to Isaiah and Kylie, my godmother, and all you beautiful people that are bearing with us. Be awesome.
Peace.
You're listening to Radiate Motivate Radio with Monique Valdez and Keith Wright, only on LA Talk Radio.